Hi, I'm the Dark Tangent, and you're about to listen to some speeches from DEFCON 2, held at the Sahara Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1994, July 22nd to the 24th. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, the Dark Tangent and DEFCON Communications, all rights reserved, except permission is granted for educational nonprofit use. Now, the Sahara, like most other hotels DEFCON's been at, has since been blown up to make way for a bigger and better hotel. So with that in mind, sit back, relax, get ready for some good speeches.
Okay, next up we have Jackal, who's going to do a quick overview of radio technology. Do you have handouts? Okay. Okay. Hello, can you hear me okay?
I'm basically going to do more of an overview. Probably not going to get as detailed as some of the previous speakers are probably going to dwarf me, but anyway, I figure I'd just give a general overview so people can get an idea of the whole grasp of radio in general, covering different aspects. Radio goes back for quite a ways. It's been around for over 100 years. And it's been used a lot. Most people seem to have misconceptions about radio. Most people seem to have a superstitious idea about it because it's the magical box we have. You know. That better? Okay. But historically, it was just something that's a big mystery that some strange arcane hobbyists messed around with. They got. They took some wire, which people hadn't seen telegraphs. They understood you stick a wire, and somehow something went along the wire and got from point A to point B. But then people had these boxes not connected to anything but a power source, and then they're hearing stuff happening over the distance. And at first, there was some noise that something was happening until a man by the name of Marconi did the transatlantic signal, and you realize, wow, this stuff can really go long distance. You can really do some amazing stuff with this. And that's when all sorts of various hobbies started jumping in there. Initially, the only use that was made out of it, since they could just barely get the thing to work, is telegraphy, just sending Morse code back and forth, because all it managed to send is just the wave itself, and the radios themselves were dirty. Filtering was not even an issue because there wasn't any special information, just turning the transmitter on and off, and that's all you had with there. Later on, it followed a similar development as Blind said, with getting voice on there. Most machines were bulky. It was all AM, which is fairly simple. And people went up higher in frequencies, and they realized, hey, the higher frequency we go, by laws of physics, the actual wavelength is shorter, so we don't have to construct these massive, huge antennas. Initially, all I could do was just send something from one building to another building, and that's all I could do. And so finally got smaller ones, and it's like, hey, we can be mobile with this. And then more developments happened. There's FM, which was invented early on, but again, everything was bulky. And one place where we couldn't tell that much bulk was in airplanes. But by the time FM was shrunk down, it's been using aircraft for so long that to this day, all aircraft is still AM. There are too many holdouts like that. Most equipment gets tossed out as time goes on. Things wear out. People want better technology, and they keep upgrading. But everyone's been watching things get smaller and smaller. Things get crisper and cleaner. And people were saying, gosh, we're going to get to where it is in Star Trek. We're going to have our little personal communicator, a little button we tap on our shoulder, and we can talk to anyone worldwide. There's enough technology that it's theoretically possible, but there's a lot of sacrifices to be made for that, mostly in organizing it and using up the space that we deal with. It's great to have the idea that the airway, the air is free and unlimited, and we could use it as far as the eye can see, but unfortunately, there's only so much usable space. There's sections that are great for long distance communications. There are other sections that are great for urban areas, but then past a certain point, it just starts becoming light, and it's not really that usable. So then you have to start worrying about, okay, how are we going to carve up the space? And right now, the FCC is reorganizing territory. What I want to go over just basic overview of some of the basic technologies. You know, I've heard several terms like what is a carrier, what is modulation, what is AM, what is FM. A carrier is energy, electromagnetic energy, that goes at a certain frequency. It goes, in other words, it moves back and forth at a certain rate, and the frequency determines its properties, and then you're tuning into that number, can listen in on it. Not necessarily listen in, but at least can receive it. AM, that you've all seen on your radios, or amplitude modulation, is basically making the voltage stronger and weaker. And there's not a whole lot to it, but it isn't perfect either. FM is a lot cleaner, which is basically instead of making voltage better, it's moving actual carrier back and forth. It uses a little more space, but it's cleaner and helps mask out interference. And the ones that, as I mentioned before, SPED spectrum is new technology that doesn't use the conventional ones. Usually we'll have the idea to have the carrier, and somehow we'll modulate, we'll put some information on that carrier and send it through the air and then pull it off. And SPED spectrum uses a different concept. It's basically spreading the energy out over a wide area, and there's, I think, six techniques used that are known, two of which can be experimented with in amateur radio, the rest are just only for government use. And the one that's mentioned before is frequency hopping. Basically, that's where a transmitter and receiver, once they get tuned to each other, will send a carrier at different portions of the spectrum back and forth at, one radio checking up on, about 100 times a second. So it's jumping one section, getting info, and then time moves to another section, getting info moving again. Some of the newer military radios and ASINOS radios are using that. And the correction channel, the global positioning system, uses that. But basically, they're not just using one band, they're moving it all over the place. So they can deviate, people can use it a little bit, but again, the government, since it's their satellites, their toys, they'll have the best stuff. Basic information can be sent, what can be sent on there. Basically, just about any sort of electrical signal. People got pretty creative. There's voice, there's TV. Most common thing people do in listening is there's voice. Since radio's been around for a while, there's been what I like to think of as various cultures within there. Areas that have been around for a while. The most common one is monitoring, people who listen to this stuff, just as a hobby. Most common one is the scanners. And monitoring itself, listening, has been around as long as radio has been around, from hearing the first experiments to hearing what stuff goes on. And there wasn't really much laws by it, around the turn of the century, until the Communications Act of 1934, because the Federal Radio Commission that was around then basically had some light legislation, had some enforcement arm, couldn't really deal with any problems that arose. Communications Act of 34 did basically two things. It created the FCC and gave it the tools and funding and the technology to enforce radio law, and the basic laws that were set forth were basically built around general principles, where they understood, radio's changed a lot in the last several years, it's probably going to change more, we have no idea what it's going to look like in the future, so, we'll just build around these principles, which is basically, for the average citizen, you can listen to transmissions, and this is in general, if, one, you keep it to yourself, you're not divulging personal information, you don't use it to commit a crime, and you're not using it for personal gain, like financial information. And then there are a few other exceptions, but that's basically it. And that's the basic rule of thumb that's been around to this day. There's been a number of states where politicians got all heated up about, you know, gosh, people have been listening to stuff, we can't have that. And so they passed these anti-scanner laws, and they've gone through various legal flip-flops. And it's, they have, best they could do, as far as politicians could have seen, is they actually saw the box. They didn't understand the technology, and they didn't know the traditions, they didn't know the previous law. So they make the various laws to give up the box. And all the word they kept hearing, the famous buzzword, is the scanner. I thought, ooh, there's scanners. And people keep thinking, oh, scanners. Scanners are illegal. All a scanner is, for anyone who's wondering, is just a radio that can have more than one frequency programmed in and check it without it to see if there's anything there. That's all it is. It's just a radio receiver. And all a radio essentially does is just take the waves that are going through the air, through the buildings, through our bodies, which can cause disease, high enough power levels. It just takes what's in the air and just takes what quirks are on there and puts it back into sound or sight or whatever form of modulation was on there. The monitoring community has been around for a while, and they're not always that active. There are a lot of people who listen. Anyone can go down to Radio Shack or whatever and buy a scanner and listen to local police frequencies. Some people wondering, is this an ethical thing to do? Personally, I think so for a couple of reasons. One is we do hold law enforcement to certain standards. Again, it's just ways of going through the air, but about police in particular, since people get touchy about that, is you see very clearly not only stuff as it happens, which is one of the main attractions for listening, but you get to see how law enforcement agencies operate. And I found that they're not all the same. There's certain ones that are very honorable in intentions, very disciplined, and do a very good job, and have a lot of respect for them. But then you also find out certain agencies are not so much interested in, say, safety, but they're more interested in control. And the interesting thing is, you hear how they operate, if you listen for a while, you can see, you know, how they think, what they do. And there's been some interesting quotes that I've heard over the air. Everything from like certain raids that I heard going on where they chase someone down and maybe they fudge a couple of rules, that's no big deal, all the way to something that they know they're not supposed to be up to. One time I was listening to dispatch, and one officer contacted another officer for local police, and he said, you know, go to tactical. So they went to tactical frequency. And then once they're on tactical, they said, okay, you're from such and such range, okay, go to car to car. And once they went to car to car frequency, which is like a lot shorter range, they said, okay, you're within this range, okay, meet you in the alley behind the fast food place. And then don't say anything more. So you won't hear everything, but you can see generally how they operate. You can see, not to put it into camp, like who the good guys are and the bad guys are. It's just human nature. Anyway, that's basically it for monitoring. There's, you know, vast majority of it is just listening to voice transmissions. There's other forms that they use, take special equipment to watch TV images or data transmissions. Another community that's been around for a long time is ham radio. People say, what is ham radio? It's like, well, my old cousin has a ham radio, or yeah, someone has this big antenna. Ham radio, amateur radio, is a license granted by the FCC, and they started the regulations back in 1934. It's basically for those who want to experiment and get me to take a test for different levels of license classes, but it's basically showing that you know what you're doing, you respect the laws, you want to learn the technology and find out about it, and basically they're saying, okay, you can do this. And there are 24 bands scattered across the spectrum, and amateur radio encompasses every form of radio use that is in use. Everything from just talking on voice to Morse code, which some people still use that because it's kind of interesting, to video transmissions going back and forth, to data transmissions, and the FCC is being authorized two modes of spectrum to experiment with, including frequency hopping. So you can kind of see how that works. Doesn't mean it's easy, but at least they make the means available. The community itself, because they actually have to study, because they actually have to look at it, you know, because they have to respect the laws, and because they're checked on by the FCC on a regular basis, tends to be very clean, very fraternal, and because it's technical, populated more often by engineers. One little offshoot of ham radio has been CB radios. You know, I'm sure everyone here has seen CB. It's a lot more anarchistic. It basically took one of the ham bands, because people were saying back and forth, we want radio. You know, we don't have to take special license. You know, the air belongs to people, and we need to be able to talk. The first attempt was 440 radio. It didn't work very well. It only worked like 100 yards. Wasn't much. So they took the 11-meter ham band, using ham, and just said, okay, here you go. And they had minimal licensing, basically your name and address, and you know, that was it. And so it had a million people and 100,000 more coming through, and they said, okay, we give up, you know, have that. And since then, for those who are interested to see what would it be like without any regulations, CB is the closest thing to pure anarchy on the air that you can get to. There are laws, but they're seldom enforced. There's, you know, millions and millions of people, and of course there are people who crank out the amplifiers and modify the radios and make mistakes because a lot of them generally don't know what they're doing. It's a lot more dynamic because anyone can grab a radio and start talking. So it's not as contained, it's not as restrained. You don't have to worry as much about you know, the feds coming to your door and saying, hey, you said something bad, you know, the other day on the air. It, you know, it just generally doesn't happen. So yeah, it's very anarchistic, but it is kind of interesting for those who want to see what free air is like. And I like to see the air, you know, philosophically I'd like to see the air free, but the reality is in radio, if one jerk can screw up a lot of stuff. So there is need to keep things in line. There is need for some laws. We don't need a whole lot of them, but the need is there. And then basically the other communities are there. Sort of an offshoot of ham radio and CBs in public service, and main organizations in there are, for ham radio, there's RACES and ARIES, and they basically assist during times of disasters like fires and earthquakes. And RACES is the one that's backed by the Department of Defense. They realize, hey, when all of the lines of communications go down, we got these guys who got the radios and know how to use them, and they're used in times of need. But generally only when there's a large emergency. And then there's another organization called REACT, Radio Assist, Emergency Associated Communications Team, and it's more community-based. I'm a member, and I got into it because there are ways that I saw there's a genuine need. One of the turning points is when I witnessed the kidnapping, and unbeknownst to the kidnapper, I saw him and followed him, and I had basic information after I helped this one other lady out who was involved in it. For long enough time, close enough to police that if I had the radio with me, if there had been people there, you know, I could have contacted through the air and would have been able to catch him at the time. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. We just got, you know, some limited information out. Since then, they do all sorts of other things. The most common activities, catching drunk drivers, reporting various crimes. I helped out during the communications for parade, you know, did the search and rescue. There's all sorts of variety of things. It's pretty interesting. It's all volunteer, so not everyone is up to it. A lot of people are just too busy. And then one of the other ones is the pirate radio and clandestine. Pirate radio is basically those unlicensed, technically any unlicensed broadcast. And usually the people who would like to do broadcasting to, you know, be able to talk to people, maybe play some music, get their points of view, get a message across. Unfortunately, unlike all the other licenses that the FCC issues, which are nickel and dime in comparison, there's a huge amount of money required to do any sort of commercial broadcasting. There's a lot of laws, there's bonds required. It's a big pain, and only the very rich can actually get involved in it. And generally what the FCC has said to people who want to get involved in broadcasting is they say, well, go to work for a radio station, which then you quickly find out when you've got to go for a job that money's dictating what's going on and not necessarily the public good. I mean, they do keep things clean on there, but again, it's dictated by money. And pirate radio means for people to be able to speak locally. And I've met various radio pirates, and the vast majority of them want to be able to talk to their communities. They would pay fees to the FCC if there was some low-power equivalent for broadcasting. They don't need watch range. They don't need mega power. They just want to go talk to the community. But so far, the FCC hasn't provided it. And so you can see over their various transmitters, people that are providing the means. So those who want it can build them and go to work themselves. If my suggestion is that if you do need something like that, be real, real wary. I mean, for those of you who saw the movie Thumbs Up, the volume of the FCC isn't anything like they sound there. They're not these buffoons that just wander around and say they're, you know, looking out for the public good. They're very secretive. They're a very strange animal. And even if you know they're up to certain investigations, there's no telling what they're going to end up doing. They might go after someone like there's no tomorrow, or they might just like scare them half to death and say, don't do this again, and then walk off. The technical expertise is very, very good, and being able to find transmitters is, you know, once you know what to do, once you have the equipment, it's very easy. In local amateur radio clubs, I've gone on transmitter hunts in, you know, 2- and 3-person teams on sort of like tiny 1-watt transmitters that are buried underground across the county, you know, competing with the same frequency with several others, and we've been able to find them once you know what to look for. And it's a snap. It's real easy. And the FCC not only has unmarked vans going around, they also have permanent monitoring stations on mountaintops everywhere. They check everything that goes on. They might not necessarily do much with it, but they listen to everything. So for those who think, well, you know, the FCC is never going to catch me, or I'm just too slick for them, or, you know, they won't know how to find me, or it's like, no. As soon as you start sending something, especially if it's clear, they see you, they know probably within a couple of feet where you are, they know what kind of radio it is, how it works, or are you likely to have got it, and, you know, all sorts of things. So it's basically a matter of, like, how motivated they are. They tend to have a lot of inertia, where they'll be complaining to neighbors for something, or someone will be getting away with something for a while, and then once their attention's roused, then they'll start checking into something, then they'll just compile lots and lots and lots of information and not really say anything to anyone, even among those that help them. Until finally they'll, you know, go up and deal with the person. They might try to hunt him down, you know, chase him on the freeway like you see in the movies, but sometimes, like the last one that I know of in my area, they were just sitting on the guy's front lawn and saying, hi, we know what we've been up to. We have everything. We know everything. Like to talk to us? And that's basically it. A strange offshoot of that is clandestine radio, and that's basically unlicensed broadcasts that have nothing to do with getting information to the public. It's the type that's used by people who don't want to be identified by anyone else, which is mainly espionage for the high-tech stuff, and usually guerrilla operations. Several friends might have picked up on transmissions coming from Central America, where it's basically a lady will get on the air and just start reading off numbers, and then no call sign, no information, nothing else. It's usually either troop movements for guerrillas, or more commonly, if it's local here, is drug dealers, because that's how they manage to schedule the shipments. Even though they might cap every phone, they'll be doing a lot of stuff by radio, and because it's going through the air, you can't really stop it. You can find out where it comes from, but, you know, it's the old cat and mouse game. That's basically it for the various communities. The most vocal forces are the monitoring community somewhat, only when everyone gets riled, and then ham radio because they have federal backing in some ways. The emergency branch is backed by the Department of Defense, and there's recently been bills passed through Congress that give additional support because a lot of people who just happen to have a large antenna on the block will get harassed if there's like any sort of problem in there, and they just point to whatever's big and say, oh, it's got to be that person. It's got something big, you know. So that's basically the people there. And you know, we're doing this too. you know, what are we doing about this today? What is there? On the ethical side, I mentioned the Communications Act of 34, those basic guidelines would have been followed for a long, long time, and it's very similar to the hacker ethic, if you will, about information being free. Basically, as far as monitoring goes, if you keep it to yourself, you don't do anything with it, illegal, or rip anyone off or anything, you just quietly, you know, chuckle about it, and that's it, is legal, with like a few odd exceptions. And that's pretty much what I'm to say. Many people may believe otherwise, but it's still there. You know, most notable exception that everyone knows about is cellular, which, you know, when the ECPA came out, sure there were some good intentions, but there's a lot of lobbying that went on during that. So it's basically Congress giving in to industry pressures. It is basically the first time at the federal level where they there's a law passed that said you may not listen to this, you know, these types of transmissions or this type of technology, which is kind of silly considering that the law covers it anyway. You know, people would still listen, but under the Act of 34, you know, if you listen, you don't do anything about it, no one gets hurt, nothing happens. And if you did do something with it, like took financial information or tried to get away from cops, then you committed a crime under the old law. It covered what you did with it, not necessarily hearing something, because, you know, going away to go through the air. Then the guy mentioned something about cordless, which I personally think is rather absurd. Cordless, the band that it's on, is shared with several other things. The technology is real cheap, relatively primitive, and all the frequencies are shared with baby monitors, they're shared with various intercoms, and if you turn to cordless channel 7, it's an exact match with most of the kids' walkie-talkies. Anyone doesn't believe that? Go to Radio Shack, pick one up, go to a phone, cordless phone where you can go on channel 7, turn on, and you will hear it. It's a perfect match. Again, people hear each other like through baby monitors, and then there's also low power experimental broadcast, which is one of the things allowed, you know, the same band. It's crowded, and there's a lot of stuff there. And then someone saying, well, you might be able to listen to something, is, you know, missing the point. There's, you know, they mentioned that there's an expectation of privacy when they do that. They never bothered to look at the bottom of the phone that says conversations are not secure using this phone. It's on the bottom of every single cordless phone made since I can remember. You know, reason being is you're not sending something through a protected line, you're sending it through the air. You're announcing it, and you're using something that's very simple, you know, very simple technology, electrically very similar to, you know, the sound wave itself, similar to just going out on your front porch, talking to a neighbor, and expecting everyone to just plug their ears in case you happen to be talking to someone and, you know, and they might not want you to know what they're talking about. Radio is something that's very open. It's very pervasive, very widespread. You know, it's basically very akin to the air itself in several respects. And anything you send through the air is accessible. You don't need to go to a wire. You don't need to break into anything. It's just signals going through the air, often through our bodies. And that's, you know, brings up kind of a problem is just thinking, it's not so much you going to information and then leeching it out of someone who's trying to protect it. It's they're sending it out to the world, especially on high-powered transmitters, various applications, and they're saying, here, you know, it's an electrical shout. And as far as security and privacy, it all boils down to what measures you take. If you go the cheapest route for possible, you're going to get very cheap security. And there's a lot of things that can be done. I remember a couple of years ago when I was listening to local cordless, people did take the measures. You know, there's speech inverters, which, sure, it's not top-notch, and any government agency can crack a thing because, you know, your basic scrambles are a piece of cake to make, but most people don't even know about them, and it's a real pain to deal with if you're just expecting to hear something crystal clear. It's effective enough. You can hear pieces of conversation, but, you know, it works. And then there's better modes from there. There are some really advanced scrambling methods that, you know, don't need to get into here, but suffice to say that you have the bucks, you can get free secure communications and all, but a few people, you need to say something? Oh. What? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To monitor a trunk system? Yeah, I check my local fire department. It can be a pain because if it's a very advanced system, well, trunking, for those of you who don't know, is where you have a whole block of frequencies, you know, given channels, and you have like 20 channels set up. And basically, instead of having to compete for a particular frequency or fight over it or collide, there's one or two channels given to control it, and digital signals sent every time someone, you know, wants to speak, and it picks whatever ones are available, you know, goes to whatever's open. And it's very efficient, very effective, but for those who want to monitor it, you have to monitor 20 frequencies at once. So basically what you have to do is devote a whole bank of frequencies in a scanner to listen to this. It's not hard, other than the fact that just things jump around. If you want to hear something continuously, basically have to wait for periods of low activity, or be very diligent if there's some large emergency going on and you want to cover everything. I mean, I'm sure you could build some device to actually monitor the control channel, but control channels change themselves and they don't use conventional protocols. But, you know, that's basically it with that. What? I haven't seen anything. It's not. It wouldn't really be practical because you'd set up a system, and you could. I'm sure you could build a device to do it. It's very low speed data transmissions. You know, not that hard if you've ever done, you know, anything with building digital devices from scratch. The problem is that okay, you can listen to that. You know, like my example, the fire department. You can, you know, follow what goes on. You can probably display it on the screen. But then that's just for the fire department. Then you go to like some police departments that use trunking system, and it's like, okay, we'll have to start from scratch again. So it's kind of a different method of security. It's more of inconvenience. Yeah. How do you feel about the radio system versus conventional? They all have their place. If you have something where you have lots of people trying to talk to lots of other people, because it's named after, you know, phone trunks. You only have so much space to work with. Trunking is great for that. But if you have certain frequencies where it's more of an announcement thing than a person-to-person, you know, like everyone hears this, there's someone you need to listen to, then that's near conventional. Yeah? That's one thing I've been looking into. Talked to various people on the net who've been doing this on the East Coast. The reason they were able to crack the code for that is because they're using just plain ASCII. The protocol they're using is FOXSIGHT, which for, you know, digital radio is real common. You can get the information anywhere. It's the same one used for pagers. It's, you know, basically most people don't know where to start, and if they do know that, you know, to try to listen to something, and then if they think, oh gosh, I gotta have some special computer, I gotta do something, or if they don't understand the protocol, then odds are they're not gonna hear it. So one or two people might be able to pick up on something. It's interesting that last year someone put a little letter to the editor in 2600 magazine, and saying, he was saying, I'm in the LA area, the police need to be held accountable, they're using this more and more, you know, does anyone have any information on it? Generally, there isn't much of that. There's some legal wrinkles to it as far as monitoring digital channels. It probably is in the darker side of the gray area, varies, you know, from the federal level to state level. It can be done. The technology isn't all that advanced. It's just a matter of putting it together and taking the time and effort to do it. Basically, what you'll probably end up finding is the same thing you'll find on the local car-to-car ones, where when police talk on dispatch, everyone in the world hears them. If they're talking on, you know, because everyone's supposed to be listening there, if they're talking in tactical or some special surveillance one, you'll hear, you might hear some strange stuff every now and then, but generally it'll still be regular operation. If they're doing short-range car-to-car, a lot of cops use the radios like CBs, and I've heard all manner of things said over there, from sexual comments about people that they're watching to clandestine meetings where they want to make sure that no one else is going to hear them, and they're having the hush whispers about various no-no things that they're up to panic when one officer who was heard some light disturbance was encountered, was basically pelted with beer at a party and panicked. And yes, officers panic, and you normally won't hear that, but if you monitor a light, you'll pick it up every now and then. Anyway, as far as the legal end of it, it had a really good start. As far as the general principles, I liked Act 34. It's very sensible. You know, the idea being that the information itself, getting it, isn't a problem if it just sits there and dies in the brain. You know, you get your chuckle out of it if it's something humorous or grand or fun or whatever it is, but that basically stops there. The only problem you have is when people actually put it to use, and that's what kind of the hidden issue as far as law enforcement agencies being able to tap into something. You know, sure, there's the issue of being able to catch the criminals, but what people are worried about is not so much someone hearing something, which might ruffle their feathers, but hearing it isn't a problem. Doing something with the information is. And that's where the problem starts. That's when you have, you know, the hackers run amok, is because they're not just hearing something, they're doing stuff with it. You know, when law enforcement agencies, they just listen to something, didn't do anything with it, no one would know, probably a lot of people wouldn't care. But the thing is, they are doing various things with it, and that's what gets people all riled up. Basically, you guys heard about the most sweeping changes as far as telephony goes, about the Clipper chip and digital telephony. My feelings are pretty much similar to the others. Basically, not just from what you heard before, but because everyone's saying, hey, let's go digital with everything. You know, hey, let's be like wired. Hey, let's, you know, send everything through these methods. And yet, those are the very ones that are going to be monitored a lot. I'm not against wiretaps happening where they have their place. The problem is the integrity of the person. It's the age-old question. Who do you trust? You know, if you talk to anyone during their lifetime, you know, about something that you don't want everyone to hear, but you're talking to someone, obviously you trust that someone more than you trust others, and you probably base that on their conduct. I think, you know, personally, I think the same thing goes for law enforcement. I'm not against any particular, you know, against law enforcement in general. Laws have their place. They may not be perfect. I may not like everything that's there, but they do have their place, and these things do have their application. It's just a matter of what they do with it. I've known many officers who have a lot of integrity and really try to do a good job and take their integrity very seriously. Those have no problem with, you know, them being on the wiretap operation because they'll, yeah. Yeah.
When I go to like Radio Shack and I buy my book on mobile police frequency, mm-hmm. and I've been monitoring them, mm-hmm. I never hear car to car. Or if I am, I don't know it. How do you differentiate it?
Okay, that's if you get it out of like the, you know, the Radio Shack camera guide, that one is just a large compilation basically direct from the FCC. It's like, oh, here's all the current licenses. Thunk. You know, and then it's up to you to sort it out. You try looking at the trunk systems on there, it's a nightmare. So it's like, oh, you want to see all the frequencies on the trunk system? So we'll list every single one that's possibly relevant that goes on for pages. Usually your best bet is on conventional systems, you'll find like various colors assigned. You know, there's red, there's blue, there's yellow, there's white, there's black, you know. And if you see it paired with another frequency that's like a little bit different, you know, using a repeater, it's probably a large, you know, probably a standard broadcast. And a repeater, for those who don't know, is a transmitter and receiver would take the signal, usually a weekend that's up on a hill, and rebroadcast it. The benefit of this is you can have a weak signal from a dinky little radio, barely makes it to the tower. Tower cleans it up, amplifies it, and puts it from a superior location that everyone in the world can hear. So I can have, you know, dinky little radio puts out, you know, 2 watts, something like that, reach one on a decent mountaintop with a decent power level that's tuned right, and you can reach and do 3 more counties, you know, if it's a good repeater. So yeah, the repeater ones is basically going through dispatch. Yeah, if you have any sort of signal strength, you know, any way to measure that, then that's, you know, if it's a really big powerful one, that's usually the repeater. If you just barely hear it and it's kind of crackly, it kind of fades in, fades out, and they don't always sound as professional, it's probably like the local car to car one. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What, to get the... Mm-hmm. Yeah. What for what frequency list? It's not that hard to catch. Yeah, I mean, there's the Radio Shack one. We basically like a list of frequencies. You have to pour through it, but you'll eventually figure it all out in the list of colors on there. The better ones are the ones that like ham radio shops or places like that, where they take the ones that have a lot of use, and the other ones that are just used for control channels or things like that are generally ignored. So it'll be a lot thinner. Yeah. The what? Yeah, you can get those. It's a big cryptic list. You'll see endless call signs. In fact, they had allocated like letter ranges, and they think, okay, you know, this should be adequate for this like taxi services or whatever. But there's been so much more radio use among commercial use and everyone else that they've ran out of call sign allocations. And it's like, whoops, I guess we didn't assign enough, so then they add more of them. Yeah, you can get the frequency list, and I know one person has it, you know, has it on CD. I don't know how you got that one, but it's basically, you know, you can look it up. It's a matter of how it's used, yeah? You won't from like your regular frequency list, but if it's a business, often they'll have their FCC license posted. And if it's one that has like a delivery service or something where they have regular dispatch, they'll have the thing posted. You can walk in and it'll tell you how many units they have, which ones are mobile, which ones are stationary, and if it's a tower or like a repeater, it'll have that listed and worked out and its height and everything else. So you know, you can follow it from there. For which application? Oh, okay. Data over the radio is basically switching carrier between one frequency and another one a short distance away, so that you have your marking your space, your one and your zero. And the nice thing is that because you don't have to worry about resistance or people cutting the wire or anything else like that, if it's something point to point, you can go to very high data speeds, and that's what we do with satellites. You know, or some of you have heard that the signals get turned to digital form, and it's like, well, gosh, you know, my modem can only, you know, phone can only handle 14.4. How can we get more than this? Because you don't have to worry about junk in the way. Anything going to space and back is very clear. All the space transmissions, like from the shuttle, from the moon, from everything else, is usually about 10 watts, and that's plenty. Within what? What physical restrictions or? No, that's only for the low frequencies, for shortwave, because on the lower frequencies, the longer wavelengths, people love to use it because it has a phenomenon known as skip, where the signals bounce off the ionosphere, and it's like, oh, great, you know, I can talk to everyone. Probably everyone wants to go there. And lower frequencies aren't that space efficient with signals. So you could send like regular broadcast TV way on there, but you'd probably eat up the whole thing. Within amateur radio, it's like the lowest one is 300 baud, which is, they think, boy, that's really crummy. What can you do with that? Well, better ones. Most common one I've seen is 1200. I think it kicks up to 192 at 440 and above, 440 megahertz. The nice thing that I found out was going through the FCC rules is that once you get to microwave, they practically left all restrictions. I noticed that if you have your ham license, anything from technician and above, if you go into microwave range, you can use unlimited data speed, you can use unlimited bandwidth, you can use the different varieties of sped spectrum, you can use multiple protocols, you can do just all sorts of things, which is kind of funny because most people don't use it, but they do leave it open for experimenting. And anyone who's interested in actually getting their feet wet and their hands dirty and learning this stuff, I'd recommend getting a license because it's basically, you learn basic electronics, the manuals are what, $5, test is $5, license is good for 10 years, and you have like a host of engineers to help you if there's something you're interested in. You say, I want to learn about digital, and you mess around with packet radio. Packet just means that we're just like network packets. Instead of sending the signals by itself and being prone to error, they'll have some bytes in front and bytes in the rear and probably some checks on to make sure everything made it. And that way you can actually send signals from one transmitter to the next one. And as long as the checksum works out, then you know the messages are intact and it's okay. One of the things that I see a lot of is it's like kind of a burgeoning worry is that everyone's saying, hey, everyone's going to LANs and hey, everything's going wireless. Hey, let's go all the wireless LANs. There are basically five types of wireless LANs. One is point-to-point infrared. Basically, you stick your hand in the middle, it stops it. All it is light. It's got just a few applications. Not too many people use it. Next one that people can have some interesting uses for is diffuse infrared. It's basically the same thing as your TV remote. All it does is basically turning the light on and off, and bouncing it off the ceiling, off the walls, and it's for your sit-down laptop conferences where you can just sit down with everyone else and automatically you're on the LAN. The problem is everyone is on the LAN that's in that room, whether you like it or not. And it's light, and anything that can receive that gets it. And you can use encryption protocols and stuff that you're usually a pain. The other three methods that are used are radio-based. One of them is using conventional digital use at 18 gigahertz and 18 billion cycles per second. That's Motorola's system. And because it's conventional use, you have to have a license for that. But other than that, it's hardly anyone has a radio that can reach anywhere near that. So it's fairly decent, fairly secure. The other ones you're more likely to run into is the 900 megahertz ones, which is in the same range as several other things like pagers and some amateur radio activity. And use of spread spectrum is very necessary because otherwise any Joe with any radio can tune into it. And anyone with the same card can tune into it. And you're thinking, well, gosh, how can they tune into this? They can basically do it with custom antennas. Antennas can be shaped to direct radio energy in a variety of different ways. So you can have someone sitting outside a building pointing a beam antenna in there and basically pick up the stuff that's in there. So that's why you have the second kind that's used, and that 2.5 gigahertz. And using sped spectrum is like where the rest of the LANs are, where people are worried about security, where it basically uses a higher frequency, hard to tune, uses frequency hopping spread spectrum, so it's like even if you get to that range, you can't really lock onto it, and even if you lock onto it, you're using cryptographic protocols on top of it, which is really good, but so only like large corporations or government agencies have any hope of cracking it, and only with like a genuine effort. Even without PGP, systems like that, sure, it's going through the air, and sure, the signal can get there, but it's a pretty good system. Yeah. Oh, easy. I've made custom antennas. I made one of them for 800 megahertz. And for those who are thinking, oh my God, you know, 800 megahertz, you're doing evil stuff with cellular. There's all sorts of stuff on 800. There's fire departments. There's taxis. There's delivery services. And there's TV stations. If you take do chords in the mixing, you can tune several radios to cellular, and you'll pick up regular TV. Then the TVs you'll turn for the channel, and you'll pick up cellular. So the whole idea about, you know, having some special device that can listen in on cellular is an evil thing. It's just electrical signals going through the air, and no technology is perfect. People go for cheap radios, cheap, you know, appliances, cheap equipment. You'll have things bleeding through, yeah? Okay, well, once I get into that. So anyways, as far as the LANs go, the better ones are the 2.5 gig. Generally, you're not going to have any people tuning into it unless they have the same transmitter, the same card by the same manufacturer, which can be an expensive proposition, but the really determined can do it. And you get better results by making custom antennas. I know because I've made custom antennas to pull things in, and they work beautifully. They make really dramatic differences because no matter how good your radio is, everything has to go through that little antenna. Just burying it underground or covering it up with everything else, it's not going to get anywhere. You stick it on top of a roof, it's going to go a long, long way. One of the other similar systems is for cellular. There's two digital modes. One of them is TDMA, time division multiple axis. Basically, it takes takes the signal, turns it to a digital one, similar to like what you're pulling off your CD, and then interleaves it with other ones between towers before finally gets back to your destination, turns it back. That's the one used in a few places. The one that all the rest of the baby bells are going to is TDMA, code division multiple access. The mode itself is spread spectrum. Same frequency range, but you can pack a lot more on there, and they're using coding techniques to cover all this, which means the digital modes, spread spectrum, you're going to have like virtually no noise. Because you're not listening to normal bandwidth, you're not going to be susceptible to little quirks and glitches and things along the line, so you can actually transmit below the noise level, which is kind of bizarre, but which means your phone's having only using a little bit of power will last a lot longer. The transmission is going to be a lot clearer, and because of the constant handshaking and a robust protocol, you're not going to have all your dropouts and cutoffs like you have from time to time with some cellular services. And it's very difficult to hack because you basically have to be either a cellular phone tech who specializes in that with a tweaked phone, or an RF engineer who can do it from scratch, which is, a major pain. So this stuff is getting better. None of it is foolproof. Unfortunately, technology, especially radio technology, the power for that tends to go to whoever understands it best. In the past, when agencies or businesses got lazy, wily hackers could get a hold of all sorts of stuff. But now that certain agencies are really getting on the ball and really wanting to have lots of surveillance, they're really cracking down, and I would knock the engineers that they have, that the NSA has working for them, that the FCC have working for them, because they're very, very good. For people who want an equalizing force, the only route left is education, so at least be aware of the technology. You guys heard plenty of stuff on electronic countermeasures. You have an idea of how extensive an agency can be about what it does, how motivated it can be, the things it can do, and a few countermeasures that can be taken. You'll never really be able to take any sort of countermeasures against anything until you really understand what it is that's going on. So people will say, well, how would I understand? What I recommend for those who really want to learn it is get an amateur radio. Now, I'm sure there are restrictions on what you can actually say and do in there, but good grief, manuals are cheap. There's help everywhere, and you can learn a lot. You get a lot of practice. You want to see how the FCC can track someone and hunt them down, go on a transmitter hunt, and you'll learn so much and find out just how fast that stuff can go on. basically what we're going to be looking at for the future. Things to look for, one of them that would be really kind of nice, I don't know where it's going to go, is the issue of of low-power broadcast, wanting to have a license provision so that people can have community-based radio. FCC doesn't provide it. The only avenue left for people who want it is to take the pirate route, and hence the cable over there with the transmitters. And I'd like to see a lot more lobbying, because the air might not be completely free, but people do, if they're not interfering with anyone, not causing any problems, they do deserve a voice. They should be able to speak. And to cry out loud, it's the air. Radio itself is a natural phenomenon. It's, something else I'd like to see, I'm not so optimistic about it, is the repeal of the specific laws, like the least cellular aspect of the ECPA. People think, oh no, everyone's going to start listening to cellular. Everyone already is listening. And it's like, well, if people do evil things, we can't prosecute them. Sure you can. It's under the Act of 34, because if they do anything with it, they're abusing us and they have fallen under the old law. If you have a quiet shuffle like everyone's already doing, then there's no problem. It's basically one of those spoiler things where it's like, hey, they think you're up to something. Here's one law where they can probably stick you. And then, like I mentioned, California has, they finally did that for cordless. Again, it's probably one of those, let's see if we can stick them with something laws, if we can't get them for anything else. All the technologies are trade-offs. People thinking, what frequency is best for, our future communications. It all varies. The higher frequencies tend to be more light, they tend to bounce more, so you can't use them in certain areas. The other ones tend to be absorbed more. But there's a lot that can be done as far as the security aspects. The only way you can really clean up all this is just be aware and do what you can politically. Okay, that's fine. But yeah, the only way you can really make any changes is just to be aware and do a few things. Just see what you can do. There's a lot of neat stuff out there. Technology is getting a lot better. It's growing by leaps and bounds. Unfortunately, there's also the means for a police state that's already can be done right now. Just from what I've seen with pagers and cellular phones that everyone's had, just from equipment that I've had access to through secondhand channels, there are ways you can watch everything that's going on. If they really want to see what someone's up to, you can find it out really fast. And it's my belief that if a police agency was to shut down drug dealers in a certain area, and they really use all resources available, they can do it in a month, flat, all of them, because of various things like traffic analysis, key hunting, and then once they see something's up, they can easily get wiretaps. Traffic analysis is watching the things that go on, the actual transmissions. Like in radio, usually you'll hear people will identify themselves with a call sign, they'll send their codes, they'll send some other information, and then everyone else will be doing the same thing. And you find police and military and will usually use more codes, and so that we can find out if either learn the codes or at least see what they're mentioning. If you hear this one code mentioned for one officer, and then 8 hours later it'll mention a similar one, and all of them do it in 8 hours, just as probably going to work and then getting off work. The ones where several people will go to lunch at the same time and they always seem to say the same time is probably the same one. And the types of transmissions, if you listen for all, you'll pick up stuff. I've heard things that I found out were stakeouts where for a couple of weeks, every now and then, about every half hour, someone would say something. They'd describe what a subject is doing, and they wouldn't say anything more. And then they'd give more descriptions. There's similar stuff for, on phones, the pen register is basically traffic analysis, and equivalent for phones would be watching what numbers are dialed. So you may not hear what's being said, but you can tell who's talking to whom. That sort of tracking is very, very easy with pagers. Pagers are incredibly open. And I'm sure everyone has had their Motorola Bravo or something similar to it. The diamond does, everyone has them. It's basically two pieces. Bottom of it is the receiver. The actual radio itself has a little antenna here and a crystal sets the right frequency. What it does is it hears everything that's on the frequency. And kind of strange thing about it, but everyone's pages are going through everyone else's pagers constantly. The only thing that keeps you from like hearing everything is that top one on the piece. It says, is this page for me? No. Is this page for me? No. This one? Yeah. And for those who are wily enough and up to it, if you just take the receiver board and feed it directly to a serial connection, yes, you can hear everything that goes on in the pager channel. And then you think, okay, how many channels are there? Several areas, less than a dozen. This is why I say that if like a law enforcement agency really wants to crack down on some particular, like say drug dealers, rather than send beat cops out saying, okay, chase anyone who's got a pager, you know, or chase them drug dealing, you push people around, that doesn't do anything. All it is just like, you know, getting off on a macho trip. If you're quiet and covert and just watch everything, you'll see who's talking to whom and who is doing what. And pagers, unfortunately, are one area where even if pagers are off, every tower everywhere in your area where there's coverage is sending everyone else's stuff. And it may be electronic and maybe digital, but it's still a shout. And anyone with like the proverbial ear to hear can hear it. Cellular is better, but it's still something that's opening up, and there are enough people that will cover that tonight in great detail. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Everybody left. Everybody wants to take.